What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, colleagues, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. My name is Daryl Glover, and along with me is the lovely Jennifer Lyerly. And today we have a very special show in store for you. Today we have a student by the name of Fayaz Magu. Today Fayaz is going to break down the life of an optometry student.
So Fayaz, talk to us a little bit about how you decided to go into optometry and where you're a student at.
Yeah, I'm currently a third year student at Western University College of Optometry in California. And the way I got started in optometry was actually a complete coincidence. I was a freshman in undergrad, and I had no idea what I wanted to do beyond undergrad. I knew that I wanted to do something in healthcare, but I really wasn't sure what that would be. And it so happened that my academic counselor was the advisor for the pre-optometry club at the school. And she recommended that I check out optometry and come to the club and listen to some local doctors who were visiting. So I did, and I really enjoyed that experience, and I kept going back to more meetings and got to meet more local doctors, and that evolved into shadowing and then into applying for school and ultimately getting in. So it's been a fun ride.
It's so interesting to me. There's so many choices in optometry schools these days. How did you choose which school was right for you?
Actually, what I did is I shadowed some doctors and picked their brain about their experience in school, and I shadowed Dr. Ron Bateman, who was a vision therapy optometrist in my hometown. And I really fell in love with vision therapy at that point, and I wanted to be able to practice vision therapy well. So I asked for his advice about a school that incorporated vision therapy into the curriculum. And he gave me a short list of schools, and Western was on the list. And so I did my homework and I researched the different schools. And I found that Western was the best match for me.
So let's talk a little bit about the student life at Western. Just give us a good overview of what your day-to-day activities are.
Yeah, and so it has evolved for me over the past 3 years. The first year is general science courses, so it's a pretty basic schedule where you're going to class and, you know, 5 days a week, and then, you know, you have your weekends. So it can be a little intense at times. It can be really laid back at times. So it varies throughout the year. It's not necessarily consistent all the way through. The thing that I did like about first year is that you get an entry into patient care right away, and you do vision screenings. And so one day a week, we would go to a local elementary or middle school, and we would do vision screenings on the students. Second year is still a lot of classroom, and you begin integrating more and more clinical skills. And then the third year is a good distribution between clinic and class. So you're in clinic about 3 half days or 1.5 days throughout the week. So that's been really great because you get to actually apply what you've been learning, and you get to integrate that as you're learning more. So that's been a really great experience.
Well, Jen, I don't know about you, but it seems like they have more hands-on experience than we did when we were at school. I mean, the first year, weekly, you're doing screenings. I mean, what was your life like, Jen?
Well, they got us into the clinic pretty fast at Southern College of Optometry, too. Like if I was saying, more screenings, things like, obviously weren't seeing your own patients. That didn't happen until second year, and when you were under supervision of a staff doctor still. But I think that's where schools are realizing they have to be very competitive. Yes, we all need the groundwork in the classroom, but the hands-on experience is what really is going to set you apart when you're getting that externship, when you're getting that residency, and getting your real job. So I think it's great that the schools are focusing on getting students into the clinic faster and faster right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know we at PCO, we were in clinic, but actually getting out into the field and doing vision screenings at schools, I mean, that was more of our second, maybe third year. But I know, I think at the time when I was at PCO, that was one of the main reasons why I applied to that school. They were actually in clinic seeing patients a semester earlier. I mean, the first year we were shadowing students and learning more about the clinic, but actually getting out in the field, man, I would have loved to been able to weekly go out and examine students or kids and just help out the community.
Yeah, get involved more in the community. I think that's something that newer schools may be doing a little bit better than traditional schools, where you expect kind of the community to come to you. I know PCO has a really well-established clinic in Philly, and SEO, again, really well-established clinic in Memphis, but it's just been more recently when I look at the schools, it looks like they're going out into the community to try to gain access to patients. So I was doing some research, and Western University, they founded their optometry school in 2009. Faiz, what do you feel like with newer schools, what might be an advantage for them versus a traditional or more established optometry school?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some advantages to newer schools. One obvious one is new facilities and new equipment. So you get to use the latest and greatest equipment in your teaching labs as well as in your clinic. In addition to that, I think the philosophy of the school is something that you can compare and contrast to other schools that are more established and kind of have a philosophy that maybe has trickled down from previous years. I think some of the newer schools may have a different outlook. And if you feel like the outlook and the mission of the school aligns with what your personal mission is or what you identify with, then that's an opportunity to kind of be in a place that has a different approach than some of the other schools.
Have you found when talking to doctors, as you're, you know, looking at getting a job out in the real world, have you ever had anyone make any comment about, oh, that's one of the newer schools, or made any remarks like that?
Not in a negative sense. Some doctors may have not been familiar with the school where it's located, but really, anytime I get asked that question and let them know about where I went to school, it's always, met with a positive response.
Well, that's great that there's not any like straight up prejudice that new schools are facing. As the students, for the most part, we're all prepared to the same standards, right? We all have to take the same exams to get our licenses. So we all have to be getting similar training. I think it would be short-sighted to say, oh, that school hasn't been around for long enough for us to trust a student that comes out.
Yeah, you see, with me, the one thing that I would look at is that there are more schools starting to pop up. And that's what scares me, because I'm like, man, we don't want to saturate the profession, or at least the area that I practice in. I mean, what do you think about that, Faiz? Is that something that brings fear to you in regards to your future in the profession?
Not for me personally, because the way I see it is every optometrist that's in practice and every student, if we had everybody out in practice today and we had 100% penetration into the population and everyone was getting an eye exam annually, we wouldn't have enough doctors to see everyone. So I think there is still a lot of potential for us to provide more care. So I don't think it's something that should worry students or worry existing optometrists, because, you can invest your energy into thinking, well, this is competition, or you can invest your energy into getting more people involved in that healthcare system, and then that problem takes care of itself.
That's such a good point. I think if we're creating a bigger body of activists in optometry with more legislative power, with more donations to our PAC funds, of course that's going to have a positive impact on our profession, because that's what we struggle probably the most with, is connecting our profession to the average person that doesn't understand eye care.
Absolutely. And I can understand why that would be. I mean, you can't really see through someone's eyes, and you can't see if someone's visual system is functioning well just by looking at it, especially if you're not a trained person. And so it's kind of an abstract thing to communicate to people. But I think, I see a lot of different approaches, especially with social media now, being able to communicate much more easily. And so I'm hopeful that that'll be something that we'll do even better in the future.
So let's talk about social media a little bit. How are you using it as a student, and how do you predict that you'll use it whenever you graduate from school?
So I think social media is a really important tool, especially for young optometrists who are really heavy users. So I personally use LinkedIn, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, and I find those are really great ways to communicate with friends and also to pursue career opportunities. So I think going in the future, I really want to invest more into using them as a tool to educate patients and to grow my future practice, in addition to the way I use them now, which is to stay in touch with friends, with family, with mentors. I think there's a lot of potential there going forward.
Faiz, do you get training in optometry school about using social media for a business?
Not currently. I know that practice management is something that I think a lot of schools see as, something that would be great, but you have to have
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. So we don't currently get social media education as part of our practice management curriculum, but I think that's something that could change in the near future with social media being more and more pervasive.
And just what about business in general? I mean, I know when I was in school, we basically had electives to discuss the business of optometry, but we didn't really have a true semester of learning the ins and outs of how the business was ran.
Yeah, I think the schools make an effort at Western. We get practice management education that's sprinkled throughout second year, a little bit in third year, and then also a little bit before graduating in fourth year. But I don't think that it's enough to feel confident about going out and starting a practice just based on the education you get in school. I think you really have to invest more time and energy outside the classroom to gain mentors, to understand some of the concepts that go into running a practice, to, I think, really feel confident of doing it on your own.
That's something that I really wish externship sites might focus a little bit more on. I learned so much at my externship sites. Obviously, a ton of disease training, patient care training, but I never really got to see behind the scenes about running a business. And I think maybe that could be a great focus for schools talking to their externship site directors, like, let the docs see a little bit of how you run the numbers or something at least.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing that could be daunting is the financial aspect, because graduating from school, you have a lot of student debt. And, you know, I feel like students feel that it's a challenge to take out a loan for a practice. In addition to the other things that might be going on in your life, if you're getting married, for example, or buying a house or doing other things that are also big commitments. So I think that having those skills will give you the confidence of feeling that if you do make that investment, that it, you know, it's something that you feel confident you're going to make a good return on and make it worthwhile.
That's so true. And I think, like, looking back on it now, we forget how poor we were when we first started. Things eventually work out and you're like, oh yeah, we could have started. But that, obviously, like, you need income right away. You need to start paying back your loans right away. So going with something that pays right away is important. At the same time, I think when you start into any job, but especially a corporate job, go ahead and be building, if you ever think you're planning on leaving, your own separate identity. And that's where social media really comes in. So you built your own brand. That's you as the doctor. Patients may already be interacting with it. You're not taking their records from the corporate chain or anything like that. But you've, right from the first, you're establishing yourself as an independent doctor of optometry, more like an independent contractor, if you think of it that way, even within the corporate job. And that's going to help make you more successful 5 years out or whenever it is that you decide, oh, I'm going to go my own way.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to touch on one thing that you had mentioned earlier, Fiaz, the student debt. What's the average student debt nowadays?
You know, I think it varies from person to person, but I think around $250,000 to $300,000 is Yikes. Somewhat average.
Yikes. It was around 120 for us, right?
I think it was around 120 to 150, 160-ish, somewhere around there when we graduated, Jen. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. How can that have happened?
I don't know. It's crazy. Yikes.
So I want to ask you, just because you do this maybe better than any student I've ever met. You're so involved. And many students, I think, I know I was this way when I was a student. I feel like, oh, well, I'll get to be involved when I'm a real doctor. Nobody wants to hear from a student, or my voice doesn't probably matter right now. But you've not felt that way. You just go ahead and put yourself out there. Tell us a little bit about all the things that you're involved with at the school and within optometry right now.
Yeah, so I really wanted to explore the profession because I felt that when I got into school, I understood some of the clinical aspects from shadowing previous to getting into school, but I didn't really know what the profession of optometry held outside the clinical setting. So one way that I found that I could do that is by traveling to different conferences and joining different organizations. So I'm a student member of the National Optometric Association, the American Optometric Association, the College of Optometrists and Vision Development, also known as COVD, and the Neuro-Optometric Rehabilitation Association, NORA. And so some of those are advocacy organizations for the profession, like the AOA, and then some of them are more clinically oriented organizations like COVD and NORA. And they've both really been great opportunities for me to meet students who have common interests and also to connect with mentors that I really look up to.
And you're also on the Millennial Doctor kind of changing a group of transitions, brand ambassador members. Are there any other industries members that you're working with right now as well?
Yeah, that was actually a really great opportunity that evolved from attending a conference and being able to connect with transition. Currently, I don't have anything that's similar to that with a different organization. It's something that I definitely have began exploring because I see that there's great opportunities in partnering with industry and leveraging some of the resources and experience that they have that I think optometry can benefit from.
Yeah, I love the way that you just have an open mind and you're able to get out and network with various eye care professionals throughout the industry. I mean, I've been to maybe, three, four conferences this past year, and I think I've seen you at all three or four conferences this past year. So it's always great to see the students in the future of optometry being open-minded and also trying to change the industry as well.
Yeah, this profession is such a social profession, both online, which is a great place to make connections with people, and then, of course, in person when you're going to these conferences. I think it's so key to getting that great job or that great opportunity. So you can't underestimate the importance of networking. Just like any other job, the best opportunities usually go to people that that person knows. So putting yourself out there now, I mean, as a first year, go ahead, start. Don't wait.
Absolutely. Now, I want to touch on the internet. What are your thoughts in regards to disruptive technology? Because this is something that's here and it seems like it's not going anywhere. Do you embrace it? Do you reject it? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting topic. And I think it's something that we're going to be dealing with for the foreseeable future. And so I think innovation is going to keep happening at a faster and faster rate. And I think that you have to adapt to certain aspects. And then you also have to, oppose certain things. And I think the major thing in optometry is ensuring that the quality of patient care is not diminished by anything new that comes about. So I think for optometry to really stay on top of disruptive technologies coming up in the future is by being more proactive and anticipating, the next thing to come. I recently watched a great TED Talk that was called How to Make a Business Last More Than 100 Years. And the speaker really spoke about how the top companies today invest in self-disruption, and they create teams to go out and look for technologies that can disrupt their current success. And then they look to incorporate those technologies and acquire them or integrate them in some way so they're not caught off guard. And so I think that waiting and reacting to certain disruptive technologies is going to be really difficult because the pace is just moving so quickly, you can't react quickly enough. I think you have to be more proactive and try to anticipate the next thing to come and really be prepared for it.
In actual school right now, do you guys talk about disruptive technology at all or have access to handheld phoropters or things like that that are coming into the industry to learn how to use them or integrate them into a traditional practice?
Not in my current experience, but that's something that may change in the future.
I think that's one of the, so like our generation, I think we realize we won't be able to get rid of it, but you go even 10 years further out, and I think everyone thinks, oh, this is like a passing phase. And maybe they are right, but it just, I think looking around, I see it every day in my clinic. I mean, just Friday, seeing patients and walk into the room and we start talking and then I pull over the phropter and she goes, oh, you still use this thing? I was like, well, yes, this is the most accurate way for us to check your prescription. So we are still doing it this way because you get to say what you like the best with this version. A computer will just spit out an answer, but it might not be what you like. And so I had to take like this 5-minute explanation of why the phropter is still the best technology. But the patient looks at it and thinks immediately, oh my gosh, this whole office looks so nice, but now you're using this old thing. Patient perception, if we're not meeting it, that's going to be a problem. We're going to have to make the phoropter at least look more technically advanced at some point because we might lose patients over it.
Absolutely. And also, Jen, just think about it from our standpoint. Whenever we have a patient come in and we see them wearing an older technology type of contact lens, I mean, we're getting all down their throat about, hey, you need to switch to something that's healthier for your eyes. So I can understand why if they're looking at a phoropter that's ancient and old looking, why they kind of have a frown on their face saying, like, hey, you're offering the latest in technology with everything else, but what about the actual instruments that you have in the office?
Right. It was a little bit of a shock, but I realize a lot of people feel that way. They just don't necessarily even say it to me because yeah. I practice in a different clinic where we have an automated phoropter and everyone's like, ooh, but I hate it. I feel like it's a lot worse. I like my manual one. So it's just such a challenge to change what we like as the doctors, what we feel comfortable, but that's not necessarily what the patient feels like is probably the best because they're used to being wowed by technology.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And coincidentally, just being here at the COBD conference this week, I did see some technology that really is impressive. And I think it's something that we'll be seeing more and more. And the thing that stuck out to me the most was using virtual reality in vision therapy. So there are goggles that you could put on that put you in a virtual reality world. And within there, you can analyze visual performance and also train the patients, and they feel like they're playing a game. So walking into an optometry practice and seeing a high-end virtual reality system, I think is impressive. And, you know, if you're someone who's getting vision therapy, it's probably the most entertaining therapy that you get. So things are changing, and I think it's just a matter of the adoption of them, and also the new technologies proving themselves. I think it's going to be something that students in my generation will be really looking to incorporate, because it's something that is important to us to be on the cutting edge.
So where do you think this technology is going to fit the best at? Private practice or the corporate setting? And which direction are you heading?
I'm personally geared more towards private practice. I feel like it's a setting that I felt is most fitting to my personality. I think technology really can fit in both settings. I think it just kind of depends on who is willing to leverage the technology and use it to its potential. So I know there are some private practitioners out there who are early adopters of technology and really forward thinking and willing to experiment with different things. I've seen that be kind of the cutting edge of innovation. And I feel like some corporate settings kind of wait to see how things pan out before they invest and scale things up.
I agree. Well, I've seen it both ways. And I know, Daryl, you probably have too. Sometimes I'll look at even something as simple as a LensCrafters commercial. And the way that they're showing the technology that measures for a progressive alignment, it makes it look like it's so high tech. And then my patients come out to my optical and I have a PD ruler, you know. And like, personally, I feel like that's more accurate. At the same time, the patient's like, well, where's that thing, you know, that's going to magically make my glasses perfect that I saw on TV? So, and sometimes in private practice, we're a little bit more resistant to embrace that newer technology. Sometimes we've even tried it and we found it to be lacking. At the same time, the patient perception is that we're outdated if we don't keep updating and changing. So it's such a hard conundrum. I think we'll see, especially like places like Warby, who are doing brick and mortar stores. The whole thing I think that makes their model successful is to limit, of course, how much staff and how many doctors they need to pay, and wow the patient with technology that makes it seem extremely accurate. So that gives a second voice to the fact that their glasses are going to be good. And if we don't adopt technology that looks that impressive, it could hurt us in the long run with traditional private practice optometry, even though we're offering much better care and much more accurate results, in my opinion. The patient may not ever walk in the door if they're like, oh, it looks like they had pencils in there. And
yeah, and I think you hit on a key word or keywords, wow factor. I think that goes a long way. I mean, just think about it. Whenever you're ready to get your cell phone, you go buy an iPhone, you want to get the newest iPhone that's out. And it's just because it's something that just wowed you, whether it's the new camera, whether it's some new function on the phone. We're always looking for the greatest and the latest in technology. And I feel like you're right. We do need to incorporate it into our practices, because that's what's going to keep patients held to the practice, in addition to good patient communication relationships as well.
I think that's the challenge for your classmates, is trying to figure out how to incorporate this next generation of technology and make it a part of the next generation of optometry at the same time. You know what I mean? How we tie those two things together, and we become the people with the best technology, not some online source.
Yeah, I think that is definitely something that's exciting, because we grew up around a lot of the technology that is making its way into optometry, whether it's cell phones that are being turned into lensometers, or whether it's virtual reality gaming equipment that's being used for vision therapy. I think, people in my generation are more open-minded to those products, because they're things that we interact with on a daily basis. So I think it's easier to make that leap.
In talking with you, Faiz, and it sounds like you have a real interest in neurorehabilitation, and of course with your membership in COVD, looking at vision development, binocular vision therapy. When we're talking to students, Daryl and I have really seen a lot of students want to go into specialty and niche practice offerings, where even just 5 years ago, I mean, Daryl, when you talk to doctors, and they most of the time we would just say like, oh, we're interested in disease. didn't have this clear cut, like, I'm a specialist in this. But I think that's kind of a great, exciting thing, like a trend within this new generation of optometrists, that everyone is like so focused on a very specific specialty that's going to connect with patients really well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really drives the growth of the field of developmental behavioral optometry is the need for it. When you look at the statistics and you look at about one in every four people has some level of a deficiency in their visual system, you see that there's really a great need out there. And I think that, you know, drives the doctors that are in that field to be really passionate about what they do and really want to share the work that they do with students. So that's something that I think once you experience, it's kind of hard to look away from once you realize what kind of impact you can be making in someone's life, whether it's someone who is a student who may be a gifted student but has convergence insufficiency or another issue with their visual system that's holding them back from their potential, or someone who had a car accident, for example, and had a traumatic brain injury and is having difficulty going back into their normal life and into work and things like that. I think you can make a really powerful impact in someone's life and feel like that's a really rewarding thing.
Daryl, I don't know about you, but I think in optometry in general right now, if you say, oh, I need to see a specialist, typically a patient's thinking ophthalmology, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but as an industry, if we're our generation of optometrists coming out and saying, I'm a specialist in this, that totally rebrands what optometry is. It's not your primary eye care. We know it still is, but we're also specialists.
Yeah, I mean, Jen, you and I, when we were practicing together, I mean, we practiced that. You know, if I had someone that came in and it was a crazy contact lens fit, I didn't refer to an ophthalmologist. I sent them directly to you, and you were always the go-to in regards to that. And you always sent the patient back, and the patient wasn't lost, and I felt like it was a good combination, and it helped to build a profession.
Yeah, interoptometry referrals are so key. And I think that's lost on many, especially more baby boomer generation optometrists. They always see each other as competition, right? And that's why I think there's so much fear about new schools opening, because every optometrist is a competitor. Whereas really, with the new schools focusing more on niche practice specialties, we're just creating so many different new types of optometry to be practiced. 5 years ago, was anybody talking about anti-aging eye care as a specialty? No. I mean, we're creating new specialties every single day. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Fez. Would you mind telling everybody how they can get in touch with you or connect with you on your social media account?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn as Fayez Mahgoub and also on Facebook.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here. Pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.